The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
Yeah, I'll start informally. If those of you in the outer hall want to come inside, there's still chairs inside here, so welcome to come in. So I want to informally begin by just welcome you to IMC. My name is Gil Fronsdal, and I'm one of the two teachers here at IMC, the Insight Meditation Center. And probably, I think what's least important to tell you is about myself. So while people are still coming in, I'll do that. So I've been involved with meditation practice since I was 19, and for 40 years. I've been involved most of that time involved in Buddhist meditation. Though I started with TM, and once I got involved in when I was about 20 or 21, I got involved in Zen meditation and continued doing Zen practice for many years, including living at a Zen monastery, being ordained as a Zen monk, going to Japan to practice in monasteries there, and then at some point I went to Southeast Asia, to Thailand and Burma, where I was introduced to the kind of meditation practice that we teach here. And it's a meditation practice that's called, in English, it's usually called insight meditation. The Buddhist word is vipassana, and sometimes you see that word vipassana being used. But we call it insight here. And so I went to Thailand and Burma, I was introduced to this practice, and really took to it. It was very meaningful for me. And did a lot of long practice there and was ordained there as a monk in that tradition. It's called the tradition of Southeast Asia. It's called Theravada Buddhism. So I have this double ordination, Zen and this Theravada thing. And then I came back to this country and continued my training, my practice here. And then at some point, I'd spent much of my adult life living in monasteries, meditation centers, doing meditation practice. What was I going to do? So I went back to school to study, of all things, religious studies, Buddhist studies, to get further training. Partly was people wanted me to start teaching, and I didn't feel ready. So I wanted to kind of learn more about Buddhism and this kind of thing. So I came in 1990 to Stanford to go to the religious studies department there. And when I arrived, there was a sitting group already established in Palo Alto. And since I was kind of a new teacher, they heard about me and they asked me if I would come and lead their sitting group, their meditation group. And that meditation group, since 1990, slowly grew and grew and grew. And then in 2001, the group bought this building here. It was a small church, and the elderly couple who were the ministers of the church, they kind of heard about us, and they wanted us to buy the church more than other Christian groups even. And the reason they said was that they were kind of mystical Christians, and their practice was to sit in silence. And they wanted someone else who sat in silence to have their church. So that was very nice. And so we've been here since 2001. If any of you have trouble hearing me, we have hearing assistant devices, which are on the cabinet over there, that you're welcome to use. And that's a strange thing to announce, of course, but... but if you have trouble hearing, maybe... So we offer a few times a year this, usually a 5 or 6 week class, Introduction to Mindfulness Meditation, and this is a 5 week class this time. It's one of my favorite things to do because it's a practice I love a lot, and it's nice to share something I love with other people. It's nice to be a witness to the people who find it meaningful in their life, and that's very nice. And it's... also an opportunity for me to try to learn something new myself. So I kind of say the same thing a lot, repeating myself, those who've been here before, But I'm actually trying to see if I can surprise myself and see if I can learn something in this process of teaching you the basics. So we'll see how well I do at this. And the reason, the spirit behind this, the attitude behind this, is that in this practice of mindfulness, it's a practice of paying more carefully attention, using our attention to look more carefully, to discover more about our lives, more about ourselves. And we talk in Buddhism about waking up to our lives. We also talk a lot about investigating, but it's kind of enter into our life to try to see it more deeply. Part of the premise, in the kind of extreme language, the opposite of being awake is to be asleep. And so the idea is most people are kind of metaphorically asleep because they're so preoccupied with their thoughts, their fantasies, their desires, their aversions, or something. And so it prevents people to really see clearly what's here. And so the point of using mindfulness is to help us to see clearly and deeply. And those two things together, to see clearly, to clear away the haze of confusion, doubt, self-criticism, fear, fantasy that we live in, so we can see clearly. And then in that seeing clearly, then take it one step further and see deeply, to be able to see the deeper functioning of our minds or our hearts, to see more deeply into our reality of the world we live in. So those two things is one of the primary functions, the direct functions of this mindfulness practice, to see clearly and to see deeply. So this is something I enjoy doing a lot. I'm glad you're here. Everything here at our center is offered freely. It's part of our Buddhist background, that it's part of our tradition that we practice and we teach in a field of generosity. It's meant to be an act of generosity. And so we have been dedicated to that in everything we do here at our center, so that we never charge anything for anything here, and we kind of don't ask really that often for money, for donations. And so it's in that spirit of generosity this is offered. If you would like to participate in this field of generosity that we operate in, because we do have, buildings and lights and variety of things, there is a box by the door. Our word for donation or generosity is dana, D-A-N-A. And once on a retreat, someone's name was Dana. So there was this bowl of, it said Dana on it. And so she took the money. until it was explained to her that it's not Dana, it's Dana, which is a Buddhist word. And so we have this donation box, Dana box. And so there's two slots there. One is for the operation expenses for IMC, and the other is for the teacher. So in this event, it would be for me, but whoever's teaching receives the donations that come in for the teacher slot. So if you participate in that, many people who are very grateful for your generosity, and it's how this thing miraculously, amazingly works. It's not exactly the usual business model. But we're very happy. We're hoping this business model we have is contagious. And it's been successful for us, very nice for us to over these years. So, the primary focus for this class is meditation practice. But part of the beauty of mindfulness meditation is everything you learn about mindfulness in meditation, it can be applied in daily life for almost everything. And so, and the line between daily life and meditation is an arbitrary line. And so what you'll learn in meditation, we hope, is something you learn to apply to your daily life. So in your daily life, you learn to see clearly and you learn to see deeply in a good, useful way. There's nothing mystical about mindfulness. There's nothing inherently Buddhist about it. Mindfulness does not need Buddhism, but Buddhism needs mindfulness. So it's an important part of Buddhism. This is a Buddhist center. I'll be using the B word periodically. But the attitude in which, or the spirit which is being offered, is without you needing to have any buy-in to this Buddhist thing. So if you hear the B word and you don't care for it so much, you can just kind of let that go. And and don't think that you have to kind of accept something that doesn't make sense to you. Mindfulness is a, what mindfulness is using an ordinary human capacity to pay attention and strengthening that that capacity. That's pretty simple. As many of you might know, mindfulness has become very popular in clinical settings in the United States. In 1979, it was applied, adapted for clinical settings in a hospital in Massachusetts for pain and stress reduction. And they took some of the most extreme pain patients they had in the hospital who weren't getting any help from the doctors in other conventional ways. And they interviewed them, and the ones that were most motivated, they taught them an 8-week course in mindfulness. And it was remarkable, the results. And from that initial pilot study, then has spawned a whole kind of revolution. And a lot of hospitals around the country now have these what's called mindfulness-based stress reduction courses. I wouldn't be surprised if some of you have already done some of them. Anybody done them here? So it can have this clearly secular application. On one end of the spectrum, mindfulness meditation and mindfulness practice can help us to relax, to de-stress. And some people find it very useful and are very dedicated to do it simply because it makes them go through their lives in a less stressful way. And they're content with that, completely happy. On the other end of the spectrum, into the Buddhist end of the spectrum, the same practice of paying careful attention brings the highest or the deepest or whatever your metaphor you like, the greatest levels of spiritual realization, spiritual maturity that Buddhism teaches. It's quite a powerful practice, even though it's always just this very ordinary thing. Just pay attention. So that's what I'm going to teach you. And it's kind of my karma because my mother would tell me that when I was a kid, Gil, pay attention. And I guess I didn't, so now I'm having to teach you. So I think what we'll do is I'm going to start by giving you some instructions on meditation posture, and then I'll guide you through a short period of meditation to kind of get you into the territory of what we're doing, and then I'll do some more teaching. So it's in the Buddhist spiritual practice world, there's a lot of emphasis on the importance of your body. And you wouldn't, some of you who have maybe read a lot of books on Buddhism might not have noticed that the body is important. At least when I was younger, reading a lot of introductory books to Buddhism, they didn't talk about the body. I got the impression it was mostly an intellectual mind kind of trip, this Buddhism thing. But when I started practicing in the monasteries, it was all about practicing with your body, not just with your mind. And so part of that inclusion of your body, to be embodied, to be present in your body, to kind of take your place and be alive and present in an embodied way, supports paying attention, supports being here with our attention. And there's a lot of wisdom or a lot of understanding that can come from paying attention to our body. Also, practically, if you pay attention to your body when you meditate, your posture in particular, you tend to kind of minimize the physical discomfort that can come from sitting in a poor posture. So it helps breathing, it helps a variety of things. So I'd like to emphasize the posture thing, and then you guys can find your way with that the best you can. So classically, people associate meditation with sitting what's called cross-legged on the floor. I'll talk a little bit about that, and I'll talk about meditating on the chair, which is a fine thing to do. For those of you who are sitting in a chair and feel like maybe you're second best, because, you know, the real yogis sit on the floor, cross-legged, in the iconography or the mythology of Buddhism, the next Buddha meditates in a chair. So maybe it'll be one of you sitting in a chair. So sitting on the floor, what I recommend is that you don't actually sit cross-legged, but you sit what's called tailor fashion. Some people call it Burmese fashion, with one leg in front of the other. So like my arms are one in front of the other, so they're not actually crossed. And that puts the least amount of torque on the ankles and the knees, so it won't hurt so much. And then it's helpful to sit up on a cushion. And nowadays, many of us will use these round cushions that come from Japan. They're called zafus. And the idea is to sit either flat on top, middle, or a little bit in the front half of it. And getting the right height is important. If you're really loose in your hips, you might want to have one that lifts you up just a little bit. If you're tight in your hips, you might want to get something that's really high, gets you up high. And that makes it easier to get the knees down. And ideally, you have your knees touching the floor, the mat, so that you have a tripod with a strong support of the knees, two knees, and your butt, making this tripod. And that tripod, as you know, is kind of, you know, kind of stable base. And it's good to have that stable base. Some people will sit in a crescent moon. We have a whole bunch of them here, and which is kind of, they find that it just works better for their butts to have the weight spread out more, you know, like a widely. Some people like buckwheat. There's different kind of material that you use inside of them, and depending on the texture of your butt, you know, the texture of the of your cushion maybe makes a difference. And so you can experiment with different ones. If you can't get your knees down this way, then it can be nice to get something, a pillow or some towel or something, and put underneath your knees, or maybe both knees, so the knees are supported. And then probably slowly over time, you'll start opening up and your knees will come down. If you're really limber, of course, you could try sitting what's called quarter lotus, which is a foot up on your calf, a half lotus up on your thigh, or full lotus, both legs up, both feet up on the opposite thighs. However, that puts a lot of torque on your knees and ankles, and chances are that you can't do it for very long. So this Burmese fashion, I think, works very well. It's a more relaxing, more peaceful way of sitting. And then sitting this way, up a little bit, also helps with a lower curve in your back. You want to have a little bit of curve in your lower back, maybe ever so slightly more than the natural curve that we have there, but you don't want to overarch either. You want to have like a little bit of strength, I like to say, in the lower part of your back. And so sitting up a little bit higher, having your hips higher than your knees, helps kind of establish that right curve. A straight back, you know, is not really straight. And so now if you sit on the floor, if you sit in a chair, the classic instruction is to sit with your legs not crossed, but to have the legs parallel to each other and the knees at a right angle to the floor. And both feet kind of flat on the floor in a kind of strong way, kind of flat and connected to the floor. I think it's best to have the knees either the same height, same level as the hips, or slightly lower than the hips. Because if your knees are higher than your hips, it tends to push out the lower back, and that puts a strain there. So if you're tall, you want to get some more support, some more cushion there to get higher. Some people, though, the classic instruction is to have them kind of going straight out, parallel to each other. Some people like to spread the legs out in a chair just to have a wider support. Some people prefer that. You can use the backrest if you'd like. There is sometimes the advice given not to use the backrest if you're able to avoid using it. Some people have to use it because of back issues. And part of the reason for that is that the meditation practice is meant to help us become self-reliant, at least self-reliant spiritually or psychologically. And you get a slight support in the process of psychological self-reliance if you're physically self-reliant. So if you're using a backrest, in the short term it feels good. It feels like you're more relaxed, you can relax more, and you know, it feels like natural to do. For the long term, if you're in meditation for the long term, the deeper kind of wellsprings of stillness, of calm, of concentration, I think are more easily accessed if you don't use the backrest, and so you're using yourself, your own kind of muscles to sit upright. Whether you're sitting on the floor or you're sitting on the chair, it's a little trick to help you with a straight back, is to take your hands either side of your hips on the floor and the side of the chair and lift yourself almost off the pillow or the chair so your chest goes out a little bit. And then as you let go of your arms, let your shoulders roll back a little bit. And probably then you'll feel your shoulders are hanging a little bit, and that tends to make a little bit more straighter feeling, more open feeling in your chest, which is nice for the breathing. More alert kind of feeling. And then the hands, you can do anything with the hands, that both of them are doing the same thing. They are, I usually have my hand just on my thighs or my knees. Palm down. Some people like to have them palm up. The classic way is kind of like the statue here. I don't know if you can see it, but you have one hand in front of the other on top of your ankle or your heel. If you have your hand, if you're sitting tailor fashion and your hand is on your ankle or heel, it's possible that because it's so far that it pulls the shoulders and your body forward a little bit. And so then it's nice to put something on top of your feet, so you have a little more height. Or if your two hands are too far forward on your in front of your knees, sometimes it pulls forward too, and it puts a strain here, so you pull it back. So then we come up to the head, and the head should be on your shoulders squarely, and which is sometimes people will turn their head to the side, sometimes they tip it down too far, and occasionally people will stick the chin up like this, And all those things kind of create an imbalance, both physically and also a little bit psychologically in the long term. So it's good to kind of try to keep it well placed. Ideally, your ears are lined up with your shoulders, and you're kind of straight ahead. It's nice, they also say it's nice if you tuck your chin down and back slightly. So a little tucking down. Certainly, the claim is that if your chin is sticking up, you're probably thinking, and this controls the thinking. And this controls a thinking mind, is what they say. And then in our tradition, we generally meditate with our eyes closed. If it's equal to you, I would encourage you to do it. If you've done other meditation where open eye meditation, that's what you're used to, you're welcome to do that here. Sometimes when people are really sleepy, they meditate with their eyes open. It keeps them a little more alert, keeps them from falling asleep. Generally, if the eyes are open, the idea is to have them half open, pointing down about 45 degrees, focused on, like imagine, it's the kind of focus you'd have if you're looking at a mountain far in the distance. So you're not really looking at, focusing on anything, just kind of loose focus. One more thing about posture, a couple of more things I might say. One is, there are these benches like this that some people like to sit on. It means you're sitting on your knees, but you're not putting your weight on your knees because your legs are underneath here. And that works well for some people. And the last thing is that if you're new to this kind of way of sitting, it's possible your legs will fall asleep. And for most people, after a few weeks, that stops happening. Generally, it's not a problem unless you start hurting. Then you can welcome to change your posture. The most important thing is to don't stand up when you're still numb. And once many years ago, there was a woman who stood up and too quickly, and her legs couldn't hold her up, and she broke a bone in her foot because, you know, meditation's dangerous. And so massage it, kind of shake your leg and stuff until you get the sensations back. The sensations should come back within a minute or two. If the sensations, numbness doesn't pass within, 3 or 4 minutes, then it's likely what you're doing is you're pinching a nerve rather than the blood circulation. And you never want to pinch a nerve. So you want to be very careful not to meditate that way again. Change your posture. Make sure you don't have that same kind of numbness again. It's rare, but occasionally it happens that way. Any questions about that? Yes. Should you do what with your core? You want to relax it. The best thing to do with your belly and your core is to keep it relaxed. You need to have some strength in your core in order to keep your back straight. So there's, you know, so that, that's something you don't engage while you're meditating. It's a kind of strength in your muscles that you build up in other times in your life, and then it's just there to hold you up. There's a lot of, you know, muscles that hold you up, this like this, right, that you don't even think about. But the muscles that we control through our tension and holding patterns, that's what we want to relax. So mostly, if you can, is to focus on keeping the belly relaxed when you meditate. Okay, anything? Yes?
Is it a good idea to not eat before you practice?
Is it a good idea not to eat before you meditate? Most people find that it helps to avoid eating before meditating, but it depends how hungry you are. But I think it's generally a good idea. But you can also experiment. Part of the spirit of, or the approach of this kind of mindfulness meditation is, rather than asking a teacher what's the right way or what's best, which is okay thing to ask, but to also be the experimenter. And so try both ways and see what you learn so you know for yourself. Okay, so you've been sitting for a while and we're going to meditate, not for very long, but it might be nice for you to stand and stretch and shake out and for a minute or two, and then we'll, and then if some of you were in a chair, want to try a cushion, you can get one from the cushion shelf. It's fine to do if you have a need. So, okay, so take the best effort at a meditation posture. The principle between for meditation and for posture and meditation is to strike the right balance between a posture that allows you to be alert and a posture that allows you to relax. And the balance of those two factors are very important, to be relaxed and alert. At evening, some of you are tired, and if we emphasize the relaxation too much, it might not be a good thing. So maybe we should emphasize the alertness. In the morning, you might be alert, or middle of the day, and maybe it's more important to emphasize the relaxation. So, once you have a posture, then gently close your eyes. And the practice of paying attention can begin by paying attention to your body. And the idea is to pay attention without any judgment, without any worries, without any commentary about what you notice, but like as if you're a good friend for someone and you're going to listen to them in a non-judgmental, way, allows them to be as they are. So you're going to kind of just start noticing what it feels like to have a human body. Here you are. And then, with a connection, awareness of your body, to settle in further, gently take a few long, slow, deep breaths. As you breathe in deeply, stretch your ribcage, your shoulders, and then exhale and relax. In a way that's hopefully comfortable for you, a long breath in and a relaxing long exhale. And then you can let your breathing return to normal. And we don't make no special effort to breathe in a yogic way or special way. Just whatever way you're breathing is fine. And then bring your attention again into your body. As you exhale, see if there's any places in your body that you can relax, obvious places of holding. Maybe you can soften around the face, let it relax, the jaws, around the eyes, the nose. It might be possible to soften a bit as you exhale around the shoulders, shoulder blades. And it can be useful to relax the belly, to let the belly hang forward, down. And then again, noticing your body, if possible, see if you can notice it from the inside, feel it from the inside. And then with that inner awareness, see if you can notice how your body experiences breathing. The movements in your body when you breathe. The sensations as you breathe. You might notice the movements of your belly, especially if it's relaxed. Or the movements in your chest. The rib cage expanding and contracting. Or you might notice the sensations of the air going in and out through your nostrils. If you have difficulty experiencing the body breathing, you you could put your hand on your belly or your chest, maybe then you can better feel the movements that occur there as you breathe. The idea now is to start becoming aware, mindful of the experience of breathing, but to do it so you can be aware of several breaths in a row without drifting off in thought. And sooner or later you will drift off in thought and you will lose touch with your breathing. And when you do, that's a very important point for meditation practice. Because when you notice that, that's the time when we come back to the breathing. And the movement of mind to return to the experience of breathing is a movement you want to do over and over again. It's returning to notice what's happening in the present. And to do that noticing around the experience of breathing. And every time you return your focus to your breathing, you're loosening up on any your preoccupation with your thoughts. And you can let your thinking just drift away. Coming back to your breathing. And see if you can gently hang in there with a series of breaths in a row. Whenever you notice you've drifted off in thought, that's an important time for meditation, because that's the time to gently begin again with your breathing. loosening up, letting up on your preoccupation with your thoughts. If you have a lot of trouble letting go of your thinking, it might be possible to relax the thinking muscle, that part of the brain or anywhere that is tight or where there's pressure to think. Let up the pressure to think. Let up the tension around thinking. And then come into your breathing. And notice how the experience of breathing in is different than the experience of breathing out. It might not be possible to let go of thoughts, but maybe you can let go of your preoccupation with them, letting the thoughts recede to the background, so that in the foreground, you're hanging out with experience of breathing, breathing in and breathing out. And as a way of helping that, very quietly, as a soft whisper in your mind, you can say the word in as you breathe in and out as you breathe out. Mostly as a gentle reminder, stay right there to be aware of the in-breath, aware of the out-breath. So we'll meditate for about 2 more minutes. In these last couple of minutes, see if you can relax something deep inside, like in your core of your being. Soften, reassure yourself. And for these 2 minutes, you're safe, things are good, you're here. There's nothing you need to think about that's outside of here for these 2 minutes. And see if you can kind of give yourself over being present for as many breaths as you can, breathing in and breathing out. And then to end this meditation, before you open your eyes, take a few long, slow, deep breaths. Feel connected to your body. Feel yourself connected to your chair, your cushion. And then when you feel ready, you can open your eyes. So at the heart of mindfulness meditation is the simple act of noticing what is happening. Many people associate meditation with having certain experiences. Most commonly, people associate it with becoming calm. That's one reason why people do it. Some people associate it with states of concentration, with states of bliss, states of altered states of consciousness. There's a variety of things that people can attain, and people associate meditation with those attainments, with those experiences, and they measure themselves accordingly. I'm supposed to be this concentrated, it's supposed to be like this, supposed to be like that, I'm supposed to be some way. The heart of mindfulness practice, which is really the heart of Buddhist meditation, is not an experience, but rather the act of noticing what's going on. What's going on this moment? And so what that means is that if you're noticing what's happening, you're doing the meditation right. So if, for example, the instructions is to stay with your breath and notice your breath, be with your breath, and you can't do it because your mind's just like in Timbuktu, and you notice your mind is distracted, then you're doing the practice. Because you notice, oh, that's what's going on now. I'm thinking a lot. As opposed to, oh no, Gil said it's supposed to be my breath, I can't do it, what a terrible person I am. That makes sense? So the heart of it is just noticing what's here. One of the claims that some people make is that the first thing that meditators might notice is that their mind is out of control. So I don't know if any of you noticed that. And maybe in different ways. One way is that the mind has a very strong tendency to think. And the concerns we have that we bring with us are quite strong. Or there's a very strong tendency to be preoccupied by certain things, be really caught by strong emotional states that might be there. Or reactive to what's happening here, or still reacting to something that happened elsewhere earlier in the day, or what's going to happen tomorrow. And these... And this being caught up in thoughts and fantasy, being caught up in our reactions and our emotions, can prevent us from relaxing and also prevent us from seeing clearly and seeing deeply. And so we start training ourselves in this practice here to cultivate the ability to stay in the present moment, to notice what's happening in the present moment. Meditation is not about sitting down and reviewing the conversation you had at work today or fantasizing about what you're going to do for your vacation. Meditation is about training the mind to be here in the present moment, to notice what is here. A little bit the paradox of that is that if you are rehearsing the conversation at work today and you completely clearly notice that's what you're doing, then you're doing the practice. But the clarity of it has to be so clear that it's kind of like you step out of the conversation and look back and you observe it and you see it. You're like the watcher. Or if you are thinking about your vacation, you step out of being in the vacation thoughts and you observe and see, right now I'm thinking about vacation. Because your vacation thoughts are happening in the present moment. Your vacation is maybe in the future, right? My son's school is taking them to Yosemite. They had plans for that. So you never know what happens to your plans. The So it's a training to notice, but and a training to stay in the present moment so we can notice what's happening here in a continuous way. And as we begin staying in the present moment to see in a continuously, that's when clarity begins to happen and depth begins to happen. We see more deeply what's really going on, how it really makes us tick, what makes us work. And in Buddhism, why we're interested in what makes us work and tick is we want to be able to get access to being at peace. We want to be able to settle some of the conflict, some of the anxiety, some of the stress, some of the attachments, some of the preoccupations that keeps us worked up, that keeps us from feeling at home or peaceful in our own hearts. And the ability to do that is a lot depends on, to do it ourselves in a mature way, is to see deeply what's actually going on. That's why sometimes people ask me, Gil, is it okay to listen to music when I meditate? Because it makes me so calm. Of course it's okay. But it's not quite what we're trying to do here, because you're relying on something outside of yourself to get calm. And what we're trying to do here is to have enough clarity to see how what we're doing to make ourselves stressed, so that we can try to find our own way through that and take responsibility for it and find out how we can calm ourselves down without relying on something external. Does that make sense? So it's a very simple noticing practice, and we're training ourselves to stay in the present moment. And the first thing you'll notice is how little the time you are in the present with your attention. Don't worry. Remember, if you're noticing that, you're doing the practice. If you're noticing that, you are in the present. And then when you notice that you're drifting off in thought, at this point in the class, the first week, the instruction is let go of your preoccupation. If you can, let go of the thoughts, but at least your preoccupation with the thoughts, and come back to your breathing. Breathing always happens in the present moment. That you can only breathe in the present moment. We hope you breathe tomorrow, but... that's in the present moment tomorrow. So because the breathing is always happening in the present moment, it's a very useful place to train the mind to stay present. And you'll notice, because it has a rhythm to it and a continuity through time, and because the breathing is deeply connected to our emotional, psychological life, there's something very meaningful about cultivating continuous attention to the breathing or developing that ability. And so the mind wanders off and come back, and then try to hang out there with your breathing. It wanders off, notice that, and come back over and over and over again. It doesn't matter if 1,000 times in your meditation session you wander off. It only matters that 1,000 times you come back. So just keep coming back, keep coming back. And probably what you'll start noticing is that what begins to diminish is the strength of your preoccupations. If we give free rein to thinking and being distracted, we're actually reinforcing the tendency to be distracted, the tendency to be caught up in our thoughts and preoccupation. Every time you let go, you're training yourself, you're not reinforcing distractibility, but what you are reinforcing is the ability to stay in the present moment. So slowly, slowly we're learning this. Also what you're doing this first week is you're learning just very, very simply what it's like to pay attention. What's noticing is like. And you're noticing just the breath, you're noticing, that you're not so present at times. Just notice in a very simple way. Keep coming back. Keep coming back. Then for the next weeks, we're going to build on this. And this class builds over these 5 weeks. Because the idea is not to go around through your whole life and just pay attention to your breathing, but rather to learn how to have a heightened capacity to pay attention to all aspects of our lives. And so in meditation, to use that as the kind of the laboratory to learn this, next week we're going to learn how to, I'm going to talk about mindfulness of the body. Some of you probably had discomfort sitting here. Other sensations of the body show themselves when you meditate. And rather than treating them as distractions, they become the meditation. We turn our attention to those. The third week, we'll talk about emotions. And so, and how rather than pushing emotions aside or considering that they're not important or not part of meditation, there's an art to including them as part of the field of mindfulness. not include them as part of the emotion of the meditation. And then the fourth week, I'll talk about mindfulness of thinking. Thinking is an important part of human life. We don't want to only learn to let go of it. There's a way of bringing mindfulness to the process of thinking as well that's liberating, that's freeing. And so that part of our life will be addressed the fourth week. And then the fifth week, the last week, we'll talk about, we'll build in all that, talk a little bit about mindfulness in daily life, how it applies in the areas of our life, and how to take the whole meditation practice deeper, because the deep seeing is part of it, right? Clear seeing and deep seeing. So, you had your first little experience of meditation here in the class. Any comments about that or any questions you'd like to ask about it? Nice to hear what it was like. And if you could please use the mic, and Richard's going to demonstrate.
Okay, so the way these mics are designed, when you speak into the top of them, like in the top of the ice cream cone, they work really great. But if you just do like this, I didn't change my voice volume, but it disappeared. So if you're talking into the side of it, no one can hear you. Okay, so, and there's a little green button on the side, so just make sure that's green. You can push on it, and it'll change. Here you go.
My previous experience with meditation involved mantra or movement, and so I was fighting falling asleep, and I remember several times during this experience in the last few minutes wondering if I was snoring and then sneaking a glance at people and nobody was giving me an evil eye, so maybe I wasn't, but... If any tricks to avoid drifting off into dreamland.
Great. So I think this time of night, many of you are probably sleepy, and that's part of it. And also, you know, probably more Americans have a greater need for sleep than they have for meditation. You know, so some of you should go home and sleep, not come here. Sleep is very important. So a few things around sleepiness. One is, if you meditate at home, is to meditate at a time of day where you're not going to be so sleepy. Some people find that early in the morning, some people early in the morning after they had their coffee. You know, they find different ways, after a shower. Some people meditate only in the afternoon, that's the best time for them, to find what works. Then opening your eyes, as I said earlier, can be helpful. The other thing is helpful to sit up straighter, put more energy in your posture, and just that can be helpful. And if you remember, unless you were asleep, I said that that when you're to help you be with the breathing, you can say the word in and out. So you can try to, if you're doing that, sometimes using that label that as you go along, not as a mantra, but as an encouragement to notice. Can bring a little more energy in the mind to keep the mind awake, because the mind has something to do. It's a little bit easier to kind of stay present. Or it's possible to, I said, you know, real quiet whisper in the mind. If you're really sleepy, you might want to say it harder, louder in the mind, you know, just to kind of get some energy there. And then another thing that I've done when I'm sleepy is before I go to meditate, I'll wash my face, my neck, my hands, my arms if I have a short sleeve shirt on, and my feet with cold water. In the monastery, you're often with not wearing socks. So things like that. And then the most important thing for the noticing practice, which is the heart of it all, right, is if you're sleepy, notice you're sleepy. And try to do it in a way that's not critical or judgmental or berating yourself in any way. And part of a very important part of this art of meditation is learning how to be with yourself without any criticalness, without any berating yourself or feeling you're bad or poor person or something. So if you're sleepy, it might be a great place to train yourself not to have those attitudes. You know, I don't know if you do, but you know, just be mindful of yourself being sleepy. This is the time where I get to notice sleepiness and what it's like. And it's hard, but that's what the task is. Can you pass the mic here, please?
If my right leg fell asleep, does that mean I should sit in a chair? Or does it mean I should keep practicing on the floor until it, because in the beginning you said it would go away in time?
Yeah, generally, for most people, I don't know what percentage, but the great majority of people whose legs fall asleep, if you sit regularly this way, within 2 or 3 weeks, the numbness, it stops. I think the blood finds other routes, or I don't know how it would adjust. So chances are it'll change. I think it's well worth taking the time for that to happen. To me, you look like you're sitting very well cross-legged. You look relatively comfortable. It's a really good, it's a great thing to be able to learn to do it this way. So I would encourage you to, just work through it. If it troubles you, the falling asleep, then you can always, change your posture, move your legs a little bit. Sometimes small adjustments can make a difference with where the blood is being pinched. Also, you can experiment with how you sit. And it might be a little different way of sitting with a cushion. It makes a difference where you get pinched. For a long time, I found it was best to have these kinds of cushions. I use buckwheat usually and have it pinch it up kind of more like a wedge. So most of my weight is on my tailbone and not kind of on the flesh part, because when it's pushed there against the flesh part, it wasn't good for me. And then for a long time, also I did a half moon cushion and spread out the weight widely. That also made a difference. So you can sit higher, lower, just experiment.
One more question about breathing for me. I was noticing a rhythm, and was I thinking too much about breathing, or is that good to,
No, I think you're noticing, there's a rhythm in breathing. And so, in fact, sometimes I guide people to notice the rhythm of your breathing, too. Is it fast? Is it slow? Just to notice it. But the trick around noticing the rhythm is just let it be. Don't participate. Don't get involved. Don't start tapping your feet with it or trying to manipulate it or change it. Some people find that tuning into the rhythm helps them stay connected and present for it. They don't drift off as much. Someone else with their experience of that meditation or a question, right behind you.
I found it very helpful what you said at the beginning. Realize how it feels to be human.
Yeah, hold it a little bit closer.
Feel, oh wow.
Yeah, I know.
You said, I really found it helpful what you said at the beginning, to just realize how it feels to be human.
Uh-huh.
And I never thought of that, and so it was cool to be inside, and even the discomfort, I was like, robots don't feel this. Maybe I was thinking then, but It was really cool. I really liked it.
Great. I saw a hand over here.
I was just curious, how would you describe the act of noticing? Do you describe it as like an active process, a passive process, or neither?
Or both.
Yeah, or both. And another question is for you is, does it eventually become a habit and you can't even undo it, the act of noticing?
Yes. Those are great questions. So the act of awareness, of noticing or paying attention, is a fascinating topic in its own right, because it's not a single thing. It's a way the mind processes the present moment and registers it. And it can be used different ways. It can be used very actively, and it can be used passively. So an example would be, instruct you, listen to the sounds of the cars outside. You weren't thinking about the cars or directing. You weren't even, but then you can turn your attention actively to this, try to listen outside. And it's an active process of trying to listen. Right now there's no cars, so you're straining. Where's the car? Or you're sitting here and you're minding your own business, you're present, and a somewhat loud car drives by, and kind of after a while you're aware that you're hearing it, but it's not an active, it's just a passive, it's received. So it can be both ways. And so over time, when people do this, when people keep doing this meditation over a long period of time, they start learning a lot about themselves, a lot of how their mind works, how attention works, how their emotional life works, and how all these things interact. And you'll learn when it's appropriate and helpful to settle back into a more receptive, passive awareness, and when it's helpful to engage in more active awareness. And you'll kind of learn. You know, it's hard to tell you now, you know, when to when and when. It's a personal thing that you learn. And then does it become a habit? Some of it becomes a habit, becomes a strength, second nature to pay more attention, to be more here. That's one thing that happens. But the other thing that's a kind of a little more radical is that it's kind of like the natural human state. This is dangerous to say. So I hope none of you are philosophers or something. You know, going to hold me to it. But just kind of very, very loosely, kind of speaking kind of with friends. the natural human state is to be aware unless we're distracted, unless we're caught up and preoccupied with things. So with time, what happens is we learn to become freer and less preoccupied by things, less distracted, and then it doesn't have to be second nature, it's just what is, you're aware. Does that make sense?
At least for me, as the meditation progressed, there were more and more interesting thoughts and sort of problems that came up, you know. And I had to really work at like not solving them, you know. Like,
yeah.
I had forgot this and I needed to do that, and if I had only done the other thing.
Great.
So
great topic.
Is there a cure?
Well, you're just ahead of the class. This is in the fourth week we talk about this. So one of the things you can notice in that process is how you get more captivated by thoughts as you go along, by the interest of them, and generally noticing how captivating and the allure of them and. Is it interesting to know? Because then you can start taking responsibility for it and maybe deciding whether you really want to do this. There's a whole universe of self-understanding that can come. We understand how we relate to thinking and how thinking works for us. So this is the beginning of that process for you. I think problem-solving and thinking about the issues of our life is a very important thing to do in human life, but it's best not to do it in meditation. Because meditation is a different process. So when I want to do that for myself, I like exercising. I go to the gym or something. And there I give my mind free rein to think whatever it wants. And that's where I kind of let the issues that I haven't paying attention to bubble up, and I can see them and I work with them. But it's not what I do in meditation. Because meditation is a time to be present without the distractions of being involved or caught up in thoughts. So I keep letting go of my thoughts or in meditation and learn a different art, learn a different thing here. But both things are useful. It might be easier to let go of your thinking in meditation if you have some time every day where you sit and have tea looking out the window and really think about things. You have that permission to do it. Some people find that as they get relaxed and feel... As people get concentrated in meditation and feel relaxed... There's a lot of feelings of well-being well up. And in those states of well-being, some people get really creative. And then they, in that creativity, sometimes great thoughts, like thinking of the great American novel and things, or, you know, want to solve problems. But what we're trying to do in meditation is not to think better. We're trying to see better, to understand, to notice better. And that happens better, that clearing, having clear seeing happens better. As soon as you notice your thinking, step away from it. And if you're really caught in thinking, then, you know, take more steps back. step away from your car, you know, step away from your mind and take a look at what's going on. But then in the fourth week, we'll talk about thinking more. Someone else? Yes, if we can move.
A couple of things, actually. While meditating today, there were a barrage of thoughts that came in and went out. Sorry. There were a barrage of thoughts that came in and went out. But I somehow felt very relaxed and very happy. And when you rang the bell, I didn't want to open my eyes. So is it okay to have those thoughts come in? Because I was feeling really happy and relaxed. It was not the thoughts that made me relaxed, but just, I don't know what.
If our usual preoccupations drop away, we tend to get a little bit more relaxed. But then it's kind of like the door has been opened in our mind, and other thoughts can surface more freely. Sometimes if things are repressed or hidden or unresolved, there are a variety of reasons, different things, they can come more freely. But if we're not attached to them, don't get involved in them, they come easily and they go easily. And that non-attached, non-involved state tends to be one that promotes relaxation and calm. So that's probably what happened, because you weren't involved. You just let them come and go. And the image that's sometimes given in meditation circles is like, let thoughts be like clouds in an endless sky. Just let the clouds, you know, drift by. Don't get involved. For my son, when he was younger, when he was maybe 7 or 8, I would do little guided meditations with him, and I would tell him, imagine that your thoughts are soap bubbles that are just blowing away. Yeah, I usually did it before, you know, helped him go to sleep. And it seemed to help him go to sleep. What he inner experienced like, I don't know. What was it like? Good? I have sons, so I get single word answers. What happened in school stuff? So, a few words. So, as I've said, this class is going to build and give more instructions. So some of the things that maybe were distracting today, like the body, body sensations, maybe emotions, maybe thoughts, you'll learn tools of how to work with those and be mindful of those over the next weeks. For right now, for the first week, what I'd like to suggest is that you meditate at home every day. Of course, you don't have to. You can come to the class if you want. But you'll get much more out of the class if you've meditated regularly at home, or, you know, most of the next week. Because then you have a personal experience to relate what I'm teaching to. The laboratory for this whole process is yourself, your own heart and mind. And it's not just kind of learning ideas. So some of you who are new to all this, it might be kind of hard to sit down and meditate. All kinds of things make it distracting, make you restless, and, you know, all kinds of things come up. Don't worry about that. I would encourage you, don't worry about any way that it's going. You can't, just assume you can't do it wrong. Even if you're really restless about the bolt, just accept that as it is, and just stay there, and just start getting familiar with what it's like. Notice it, look more carefully, come back to your breathing. Kind of, right now we're just learning the territory. You come into a new land and you're looking around to discover what it's like. And if you spend the next week doing that, when you come back for next week and we talk about the body, you'll be in better position to understand what I'm saying. Once you've kind of gotten instructions for the body and a little bit familiar with that, that'll be tremendously important for understanding instructions on emotions. In fact, it's a lot easier to be mindful of emotions if you know how to be mindful of your body. And it's a lot easier to be mindful of your thoughts if you know how to be mindful of your emotions and mindfulness of your body. So this is why we build this way over these weeks. So I'd recommend that you meditate at home. And for the I recommend that you start with 15 minutes. And find some time during the day where you're not going to be disturbed. Go into your bedroom, early in the morning or some other time. Make sure you turn off your phone, the ping on your computer. So you're kind of left alone, just to be with yourself. And then don't listen to the voices that or the thoughts that arise inside of you that say that you know, the freezer needs to be defrosted now. that Microsoft Outlook has an important message for you now. that you know, to just try, just stay in for your 15 minutes, and consider it as a laboratory of discovery. Keep coming back to your breath. There is this handout. There's a white sheet of paper that reviews some of this basic instruction there, and it also has some reflections and exercises in the back page, like kind of, I don't know if you want to call it homework. It's that you can do and engage in during the week if you want to go a little bit further with this process of exploration. It's relatively easy to find on the web. Well, most people, if you have a smartphone, there's usually a timer you can put on and just have it, you know, that's how you know when your meditation's over. Just put a timer on. On our website, in other places, you can get a meditation timer. And what that's nice is because they have a really nice bell. That really nice bell. You can just set it. You can have it set it for you know whatever minutes you want to meditate for, and then this nice bell ends your meditation. It's generally good to try to meditate the same time every day in the same place because of the association that builds up with that time. It's kind of like you get used to it. It's kind of like there's fewer variables to deal with in terms of learning what's going on and do the exploration. If you meditate one day in the morning and another day in the afternoon, another day at night before you go to sleep, you're different, so different every time that there's not the kind of natural comparison or kind of understanding familiarity to kind of explore this territory more quickly or something. However, if you need to meditate randomly like that through the day, please do. But if you can do it at the same time, and also the same place, if you have a corner of your bedroom that you can, that's the only association you have is meditating, it's easier for the body and mind to kind of get into it because of the association. If you only meditate in front of your television, and you spend a lot of time ordinarily on television, then, the associations are so strong for, finding out what's going on in that world instead of the real world. So, so that's kind of what I had in mind for today. Any questions? More questions? Yes, here. The green light.
So I often notice that I'm. I'm controlling my breath to various degrees. Anything to say about that?
Well, are you doing the practice? Noticing. So just notice that you're controlling your breath, and then maybe even note what it's. Get curious. What it's like. What's the feeling in your breathing? It feels like controlling it. What's it like to control it? And then that's the basic practice. That's all it is. If it's easy to let go of the control, by all means, it's nicer and relaxing to let go of it. But this core way of practicing mindfulness, just noticing what is very helpful with controlling the breath because reacting and thinking it's a problem and trying not to control it just ties your mind up in knots and just kind of makes the whole thing a big circus. And if you just, it's okay to control your breath, and you just now your task is to just be mindful of a controlled breath, until it passes.
Does mindfulness, is that one of the types of things that can help build new neural pathways practicing it? And is this something that can help with maybe preventative of Alzheimer's?
And so I think that yes, I think you're developing a skill and a muscle in the brain and the mind that's very helpful and very useful. The ability to not be caught by the thoughts and distracted by the thoughts certainly helps with memory, helps with paying attention to what's going on. It helps us notice more deeply what's happening when we're in the world, what we're doing, so it registers more deeply. I think all those things can help with Alzheimer's. As the beginnings of stages of it, probably makes a person maybe cope a little bit better and manage better, which is not always a good thing if sometimes people who have early Alzheimer's are hiding it from everybody else by, you know, and if you just want to be learn mindfulness to hide it so no one notices. I don't know if that's useful. The whether how much it helps with Alzheimer's, I don't know. I don't know what kind of studies have been done. I believe it must help. But there's something else that's very interesting. People often ask, can mindfulness help with all kinds of conditions? And there are a lot of studies, clinical studies, that show that mindfulness actually helps with a lot of different conditions, health conditions, psychological conditions, all kinds of things. In the ancient texts, they didn't recommend it for this reason, but the ancient texts in the time of the Buddha, they described that the people who went really deep in meditation had really good complexion. So some people, that's their concern, right? So there's a lot of benefits that can be had from it. But there's something more radical that can happen from this. And that is, rather than getting a direct benefit, like say the person's in pain, or say that a person has grief, the pain and the grief might go away with mindfulness, but it might not go away. And the thing that's more radical is that what might change is we start understanding our relationship to the pain or the grief. And it's possible that the relationship shifts from one of attachment, from aversion, from fear, from reactivity, to one of being at ease with it, or open, or non-attached, or non-reactive. And so the pain might still be there, but it's more okay to have it. In fact, it's possible to have physical pain and have joy bubbling up at the same time, which seems, you know, most people think that's kind of strange. But it's possible to decouple the mind's reaction to the pain, so the mind is actually quite at peace while the body's on fire. And it's possible to have grief, but without any of the kind of complicated relationships we form with the grief. Poor me, I shouldn't be so, this is the end of the world for me. You know, whatever it can be. And so it shifts the relationship to it. And so the same thing can happen with a mental condition, you know, like Alzheimer's or something, that maybe the mindfulness can't, it's not a cure for Alzheimer's. Maybe it doesn't make things better in terms of memory and that. But it might help a person learn how to be at peace with a very serious condition like that, so that the secondary suffering around it doesn't have to be there. The distress, the fear, and all the extra stuff that makes it so much. And if the fear and the stress around having it diminishes, then it's probably easier to cope with it. That makes sense? So before we go, there's this white handout. I don't know where there's more of them, but maybe on the end of the stage there. Yeah, on the end of the stage. There's also a newsletter by the door of the center here. You're welcome to take that and see what we do here. And also, there's copies of my book called The Issue at Hand, which is essays I've written about this basic aspects of mindfulness practice. And you're welcome to take one of those. They're by the door. There's probably more if they run out. And that also has some little chapters about some of the stuff, like mindfulness of breathing, if you want to read more about it. So I wish you well with your meditation at home. And I hope you notice a lot of interesting things. Thank you.